Hello, Mech Warriors, and welcome to the Mech Bay, where we fix your mech and fix your game. Hello, everybody, and we are the Mech Bay Podcast, your number one source for everything casual up to competitive tabletop Battletech content. I'm your host, Josh, and I've got with me today my co-host, Dustin.
Yo.
And today we are going to be talking about our favorite space invaders from the periphery, love them or hate them, the Clans. This will be the first episode in a running couple of episodes where we discuss the Clans in depth, who they are, what they bring to the table, and how to fight with them and fight against them. But as always, first we have our recap from the last week's episode. But instead of news today, we're going to start with a segment that's been long coming. And that's Games Played.
Games Played.
All right, so me and Dustin, as you probably heard, did a local meetup and actually played a couple games of Battletech with people we had never played before. So, Dustin, why don't you lead off into Games Played?
So I brought out my board. I made, it's not, I don't know how big it is. I've never measured it, but
it's almost 4x8. It's not
4x3, maybe?
I would say it's 5x3.
5x3.5 or something like that.
Yeah, it's stupidly big.
Yeah, it's just a piece of plywood. So my 3D printed terrain takes, as we discussed in the past on the 2D versus 3D episode, takes a while to set up and break down. So I just got a piece of plywood, cut it to a shape, roughly, it is rectangular. But anyways, that way I could build the 3D terrain city at home, throw it in my car, bring it to the local game store, and then set up takes 0 minutes. Zero additional minutes for terrain. So yeah, I brought that monstrosity to represent the local Battletech scene. This was like a first night back out at the local game store. That was how they build it. And yeah, rolled dice with a new player. That was good. I brought pilot cards from, I think, Game of Armor Combat and kind of semi-randomly doled them out, you know, like, if you had the mech, I would find that mech. Like if you had a Wolverine, I would find the Wolverine pilot card and give it to the players. That way we had some killer pilots for the first game. So it wasn't all just rolling misses to make a more exciting and cinematic first game for this first time player.
What all mechs did you bring?
Gosh, what mechs did I bring? Give me just a moment. I brought a catapult. I brought a thunderbolt. It's harder for me to remember because I only used half of them. We had like a third player show up and I gave him half my list. So I remember running the catapult and the other player on my team ran the thunderbolt. There was a griffin? Yes, there was a griffin. That was the other mech that the other player was using. It was a griffin and gosh, I have pictures somewhere. And a commando. There you go. Have fun cutting that up.
The poor commando. Forgotten. Relegated to the back alleys of Dustin's memory.
Yeah, the commando got exploded pretty early on in the game, but I think he went in for a backstab or something and did some damage, but I think got the worst of the trade. Catapult, C1, a beast as always, especially in an intro tech game. New player brought a Yeoman, Shayu, Stalker, and a Raven. And they ran their Stalker hot to see what would happen to a mech when you cook it alive. They ended up taking automatic shutdowns. And I think we dug the pilot out of the cockpit when the mech was shut down. So those were some of the highlights from that game.
So did you hold any punches or did you go, you know, I don't want to say balls deep, but...
Yeah, no, we held punches. I gave us less BV and worse pilots.
Okay.
And there was no conclusive end to the game. We ran out of time. It was our first night out, and we were just, frankly, having a great time just being humans in meat space, as they say.
Did your opponent enjoy the game? Did he go home thinking Battletech's the game for him?
I think so. We've got a convert for life. How about you? I know you played maybe not a new player to Battletech, but a new player in our area.
Yeah, so I played Drew, a newer to the local scene. He said that he had not played in 3 years. And I mean, technically, me and you haven't played in-person Battletech in a year. So
a year and a bit, yeah.
Year and change. So that's not too much of a difference. But he came with some... It was funny because they were all like mechs that have been released recently, but they were all the old sculpts, which I thought was funny. Like he brought a Thunderbolt. Yeah, so he brought a Project Phoenix Thunderbolt, a Griffin, a Commando, and a Stinger. I just thought it was funny that these are all mechs that I have in new plastic, and he has all the older versions. I brought my Black Knight, my Grasshopper, my Mongoose, and my Lancelot. My essentially what I like to call my everyday 5K, only one non-energy weapon in the list, and that's the Grasshopper's 5, or LRM-5.
Is it really? That's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's the only ammo that I have to take track of. I only have to, only have to worry about heat for 99% of all the shots, so it's kind of nice.
Focus all the attention on heat management, none of the attention on ammunition management.
Exactly. It makes logistics easy for my boys.
It really does.
But we did not play on a fancy 3D table like you did, but that's perfectly fine for me. We played a city map and had a grand old time. He actually made a weird decision to run 3-4 pilots, but I was perfectly happy. I asked if he wanted me to lower that because I realized I had a little bit more of a tonnage advantage and armor advantage to him. But for those first couple turns, it was touch and go for a little bit. He was putting PBCs and LRM rounds on me like nobody's business. I got a nice lucky break when he tried to flank his commando behind my Lancelot. And for the second time in the last month, I did a fun arm flip and with my first large laser shot, found ammo.
Nice. And commando go boom.
Commando went boom. And after that, it was a struggle for him to maintain momentum and dictate where he wanted me to be. So that was still fun. He got a death from above with his Griffin onto my Grasshopper.
And it connected.
And it did connect.
You saw it here, ladies and gentlemen, the first death from above successful that I've seen in my Battletech career. And I have played a couple games and seen a couple games be played.
Unfortunately, he did all, I want to say like 15 plus points of damage to the arm.
See, still doesn't work.
Yeah, he rolled his three locations and it was all the same.
Oh, well.
Didn't even take the armor off. That was the worst part. I think he had a lot of fun, and I'll look forward to playing him again next time we can all get out. I think it's about time we start scheduling up local stuff to be on the more regular schedule.
Absolutely. Did you guys run an introductory technology game?
Yeah, no, this was 3025. No. Yep.
Yeah.
That was like the Lancelot was the downgraded version, so very little armor and very bad heat. I didn't get to shut down levels of heat, but I did get definitely plus one to move and plus one to hit.
Yeah. You bring an all energy list, you're going to be running a little hot.
It's my favorite way to play.
That's right.
No, it was still fun. And I know Denim was there. He played a newer person. And I think that was his first game of Battletech.
Yeah, first game of tabletop Battletech. I think they've been in the Battletech universe for a while. He showed up with a like large scale 3D printed King Crab. It was great.
Which I thought was hilarious because Denim showed up with a large-scale 3D printed Griffin. Or, I'm sorry, a 3D printed Shadowhawk.
Yeah, and the one of the Thunderhead Shadowhawk sculpts.
Yeah, those two were just destined to play that night, and there's no way I could have interfered. Yeah,
nobody could intervene.
But I lent him my King Crab to play with, and Denim brought out his Clanbuster Black Knight, and it was
that fresh plastic.
Yeah. Like, literally, we hadn't had it for more than a week, and he was already bringing it to the table. Just like Christmas, everyone.
Good-looking sculpt.
But I think that game came down to them bashing each other over the heads, and one of those, everyone had fun, everyone went home a winner for that game, as far as I was aware.
Okay.
Yeah, no, it was a grand old time of Battletech. Like I said, I'll be looking forward to the next time either me and you or me and some of these new players can start round-robining off to see who's the best mech warrior on the field.
Yeah, I need to, once I'm done, I played a lot of war games in general last month, and once I'm done with my penance, I'll be looking to play the next scenario from the future tournament packet. I've got it mostly in my head, I gotta write it down, do like a in-brain playtest real quick to see if there's any obvious errors or things that could be better, and then go ahead and give it a real playtest, ideally on the table across from a person.
It's building related, if I can read your mind thoughts correctly.
It is indeed.
You doing all of your 3D printed spaceship hobby progress.
Yeah, hobby progress time. Okay, so I read about this game, and this is the future of the podcast, by the way. It's called A Billion Suns. It's Mike Hutchinson's.
It's not the future of the podcast.
No, yeah. Don't worry, people. Faithful MechBait podcast listeners. It's a miniatures agnostic game. A lot of rule sets are released that way these days. It's hip, and I don't have any little spaceships. So I thought, and it's really funny because I've been listening to last week's podcast. I like to listen to the finished product, and I was laughing at myself when I was talking about who's going to 3D model these mechs. Well, I started making little spaceships. So I got Fusion 360, I downloaded it, and I started modeling them, and I have a resin printer. It's actually pretty incredible. We live in the future. And I can 3D design a miniature and then go 3D print it. And this can all happen in like 24 hours. I can design the ship the night before, print it while I sleep, and I wake up, paint it that afternoon, and I have a prototype ready to go by the end of the night. But the main point is that's pretty much all I've done with my free time for the past 2 weeks. So I'm like two ships out from being done with the set, and then I'll cool it, finish up my clan invasion mechs, or, you know, invasion wave one stuff. I'm just about done with my Clan Wolf Alpha Galaxy stuff. So that was my hobby progress this week. How about these past 2 weeks? How about you?
I played a game of Drop Fleet Commander because you got me into spaceships and I had to find someone to get my spaceship gamage out. So I played my friend on that. I won a Drop Fleet game for the first time. So that was pretty exciting.
Woo!
Yeah, but that was my non-Battletech hobby playage.
And you did some Battletech hobbying, didn't you?
I did a lot of Battletech hobbying for like one of the first times. I essentially reignited the spark of Battletech painting for me by playing. So I only paint to play, and I only play if I can paint. So getting that game and really kind of reignited me. I sat down, I got the airbrush out, and I airbrushed, I want to say, 80% of my clan invasion mechs.
Dope.
All of my clan mechs got a nice fun coat of Night Lord's blue to go for my Diamond Shark Alpha Galaxy. I kept on going, and I think you were there with me deciding how to go from there. Like, do right. I go light? Do I go dark? Like, is this the right shade? I had the slight mental breakdown, and I just started dry brushing. Like, I went straight from base coat to dry, and I had not looked back. And honestly, I'm super pleased with it.
Like, yeah, they look good. They look great.
I did not do any wet paletting, no paletting at all. It was all base coat, color, and then straight to dry brushing. I went skink blue to like a long beard gray, and then a praxy white, and then I just literally threw a very thin coat of Gilliman blue glaze onto it, and it's like the exact blue that I could imagine.
It's nice when it works out.
And it was fast and not time intensive of trying to blend paints together correctly. It was all just brush technique on getting corners, and I got a nice effect going from lighter to darker, like OSL top to bottom, but also front to back. So you can kind of definitely feel the speed of these mechs running through and just taking a little bit of dings and dents there and the paint chipping off at the corners. I also assembled my new metal mechs from Ares Games and Miniatures. Got those pretty fast. Those were not a pleasure to assemble, but they are a pleasure to look at. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing. I should finish most of these up by the time y'all hear this, and maybe it will be the picture for the Facebook page. But if not, you can definitely check that out on our Discord channel in our Hobby Progress channel.
Yeah, you'll see photographs of all this stuff we've been working on our Discord.
If you enjoy looking at models and just want to like talk on like a more like minute-to-minute basis, feel free to hop on in. And the invite to that will be on our Facebook page, or you can just email or message me, and I will send you the link right away. So we've got a quick mini news segment from Fortress Miniatures and Games. If you haven't picked up your Percival custom mech from Fortress Miniatures and Games now, you should do so, as there's a painting competition going on until August 14th, where you can win $75 of store credit. If you paint that, send them the picture, and they select you. So get those painted, get those pictures into Fortress, and hopefully get some clan or intersphere reinforcements your way. All right, so let's take a quick break and see what's new around the sphere.
So for today's commercial break, we will be discussing the economic ramifications on the Draconis Combine's concession of worlds to the fledgling Free Rosalhog Republic. Joining me today is Professor Johann Krupp of the Tharkad Ministry of Commerce. Thank you for joining me today, Professor Krupp.
It's a pleasure to be here in the sphere with you today, Mr.
Attention, MechBay Podcast. I am Star Colonel Tarkov Kostin of the Diamond Shark Clan. A full trinary stands ready to conquer your HPG station. What forces dare oppose us?
Is this some kind of joke?
You dare refuse my bachal? Prepare to feel the fury of the shark's bite.
Refuse your what? And we are back. To set the scene for all of our listeners, imagine the year 1989, September. TRO 3050 drops after FASA teases their readers about silence in the normally chaotic periphery. And the days of balancing by tonnage were never to be seen again.
Bye-bye, tonnage balancing.
So this isn't the What the Faction episode for the clans, but we are going to cover them from a bird's eye view. Justin, who are the clans?
So in a nutshell, the Clanners are the descendants of the Star League Defense Force that left to the periphery and fled the ensuing chaos of the Inner Sphere before the Great Houses descended into a couple centuries of regression and war. They're weirdos from beyond the periphery with a rigid caste system and a eugenics program. How would you describe them in a nutshell?
So essentially, they're honorable barbarian warriors. You take a little bit of the Bushido from the Draconis Combine and you wrap that up into weird military people and smush it together with a little bit of large laser, and boom, next thing you know, you got the clans.
Yeah, it is. I've read, I want to say, half of the Warrior trilogy, and the Clanners do have some depth to their society. I think we're going to cover the Warriors, which is the majority of what we care about, because they pilot the mechs and the elementals and the aerospace assets in some extent. The Warriors and their culture is the most fleshed out in the fiction. You hear a little bit about the scientists. You hear a tiny bit about the laborer caste.
This is battle tech, not labor tech.
Yeah, exactly. So
what are the clans invading for? What's their purpose to disrupt our beautiful Fourth Succession War, Helm Memory Core? Things are just starting to look up for Milhouse.
That's right. So you've got four major clans that want to invade this inner sphere for kind of two separate reasons. So you can break the four major factions into two separate ideologies. You have the Warden clans, which want to invade the inner sphere as a, I don't know, would you say like a loving dictator?
Helicopter mom. They're a helicopter mom.
Yeah, they want to break up the Inner Sphere squabbling and return the Inner Sphere to the order that the Star League Defense Force had once brought upon the Inner Sphere. And then you have the Crusader clans that believe the Inner Sphere to be their birthright, somewhat. Would you say that's the right word?
Yeah, I would say either birthright or it needs a strong guiding hand, and they're the hand to lead it.
Yeah, the Warden clans, they want to protect the Inner Sphere from itself. And I think the Crusader clans, they're going to take the Inner Sphere from the Inner Sphere. They don't deserve the Inner Sphere. And most importantly, they want the cradle of humanity. They want to retake Terra. So they set off on a crusade from the clan space, which exists far outside of the periphery. And then they show up and things start to happen.
So I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but are they the bad guys or the good guys in a universe of no good guys, unless you have two last names and you're the prince of two nations?
I mean, it kind of, they make it hard to like the Clanners. The Warriors exist on, like, if you take a meritocracy and you just take it to its logical extreme, that is what the Warrior caste exists in. That is their guiding principle. They literally have a structure and mechanisms for solving petty squabbles by beating the living daylights out of each other in a circle of equals. It's a little ritual where I feel like the Warrior caste needs a teacher on the playground to break up the fight sometimes, but there is no teacher. There is no breaking up the fight. And whoever's the strongest or the most cunning, you know, wins the day. Which leads to the best warrior doesn't always make the best leader, but that's how the warrior system works in a lot of clans. The most fierce or cunning warrior or combination of the above ends up leading their inferiors. They become the Khan, or they become their Star Colonel, and they don't always make the best commanders. They also have their eugenics program. I mean, it's hard for me to like the Clanners. Sometimes they literally feel alien, and when they act in human ways, I have this like this moment where I'm like, I forget that these people are humans and they do act in human ways sometimes, but their culture is so crazy that they genuinely seem alien to me. So I love to play as the bad guys, but I'll call them the worst guys. Like, yeah, there's no good guys in Battletech. That's the point. Maybe I'll call them the bad guys. How about you?
I like to think that the clans is just allegory for the Lord of the Flies. The Starling went off, crashed on an island. All you had was a bunch of military people forced at gunpoint, scientists and laborers. We all know what kind of would happen there. It's not utopia that we would like to think of. It's military utopia. They like to run their place the way they like to. We'll get into each clan's different feelings on that another day.
Yeah, the clans, you know, because there's multiple clans. We call them the clans, but there are different ideologies, and they are not a monolith. They do have different ideas and worldviews. But yeah, for another episode, this is the bird's eye view, the overview of the clans.
So let's get to the real meat of why we're here. What makes the clans different on the tabletop than what we've been playing for the last 20 years?
Yeah, what do we really care about? Clan mechs. So clan warriors, they have all of their silly culture, but on the tabletop, they're 3-4. So they got better gunnery, they've got better piloting. They're all veterans, so to speak, because of the way they're trained. They feel like Spartans in that way, that every person in a battle mech from the clans, that is their job. They weren't recruited, they weren't drafted, so to speak. I mean, they were, you know, born and bred for it and then weeded out. So on the tabletop, typically you take clanners as 3-4, which takes their expensive in battle value mechs and makes them even more expensive.
So the clans are a force that's built around fast blitzkrieg tactics. They've got a lot of long-range weapons because that's how they're designed to play, but that ends up being used to snipe, taking advantage of those weapons that only get better as the enemy gets closer. Movement-wise,
they're fast.
They are fast. Their heavy mechs are 5'8 normally, and it only gets faster from that.
Since we're hot off of the mech construction episode, if you don't know already, Clan XL engines take up less slots. So if a clan mech loses a side torso, they aren't removed from action. They aren't combat ineffective. The mech isn't destroyed. Just about every clan mech you see on the table is going to have a Clan XL engine. So they just go faster and they have the tonnage available to load in more weapons. So you've got fast mechs that hit hard.
These mechs will move across the table before you can even put the next map sheet down. So if you're playing with them, you're definitely playing on more than just a single hex or a single map sheet. You're playing either on a full table of map sheets or at least one or two of the neoprene mats.
Yeah, if you're playing an opponent or you are playing as a clan, with some exceptions, you typically want to have room to navigate.
In addition to their Clan XL engines and their higher than average top speeds, you'll see a lot more of jump jets on standard mechs. In addition to their XL engines and high top speeds, they also stopped running what we would call the battle mech and started running the Omni mech. So these Omni mechs are essentially Lego pieces built around a chassis where you can swap in and out the pieces depending on which mission. Rather than have LRMs for your primary weapon, you could run all lasers. Don't want lasers because you're running on a hot planet, all autocannons. Unlike the Intersphere, where this has to be done in a refit factory, essentially, it's all done on the battlefield with just plug-and-play parts.
Yeah, it's hard to take advantage of the Omnimech's battlefield refit superiority outside of a narrative campaign setting, which is unfortunate, but it's a thing to keep in the back of your head, and it's definitely something you're going to notice if you're running a series of games where the prior game matters for the next game.
This would be like a single person playing a game with a grasshopper and wanting to swap to a completely different variant the next game, even though it's a continuous right after the battle. For an Omnimech, that'd just be like parking in the garage, dropping the engine out of your Corvette, putting
a new one in there.
Putting a new one in there to go racing. It's really cannot be understated how quick and efficient the Omnimech chassis is compared to the regular battle mech chassis.
It's modular.
Remember, this was in the 90s when computer parts were more hardwired in and we couldn't just swap memory and hard drives like we do now. Things were integrated and soldered in.
It was the technology of the future.
While Intersphere Battlemechs were limited by the technology of their time, the clans and their Omnimechs were not limited.
So tell me about the weapons they bring to the battlefield.
So their weapons are everything the Intersphere started with, without the crippling effects of the first, second, and third succession war to hold them back.
Yeah, without getting too far into it, while the Intersphere was busy beating itself, once the Clanners kind of got their crap together, they had a golden century. So they show up just ripped and ready to go.
While the Intersphere has regular variants, short-range variants, and long-range, the Clan has essentially only long-range variants. Their pulse lasers shoot farther. There is no more regular PPC or lasers. It's all extended range. Autocannons
are lighter.
And their autocannons are ultra variants from 2 to 20. Their autocannons also have LBX versions from 2 to 20.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but the LRMs they bring to the battlefield are not only roughly 50% of the weight of Intersphere contemporary LRM sizes, but they also have no minimum range.
That is a huge game changer when you're trying to run up and close the distance on a clan mech. There is no minimum range for almost...
Somebody made this mistake playing against me. I brought my clan mechs. They had some Intersphere stuff. I want to say it was a Mislinx, and they figured they'd charge the light mech, get under the range of the LRMs, and they were surprised to learn that there was no minimum range. There's also a story from the Legacy book, right?
Yeah, it's the first meeting of the Grasshopper against the Vulture.
Yeah, the Vulture. And the pilot charges the Grasshopper in with a tree branch or, sorry, a tree trunk or something like that, expecting to get under the LRMs, and they are pleasantly surprised with 40 missiles.
Point blank.
Point blank.
Safeties are off. But I mean, if you look at the clan invasion, they literally do put the LRM sitting right outside. Like I could touch the missile itself. And I think that's a design flaw that I think on the origins of Battlemechs really needs to get on. Like leaving missiles exposed on a battlefield. That's asking for trouble.
Asking for cook-offs. But they have case magically. All clan mechs have case innately. They don't have to pay for it in tonnage. They just have it. And that's another thing to remember. Their PPCs, their ER PPCs do 15 damage and 15 heat instead of 10 and 10, in addition to being longer range. So their pulse lasers do 7 damage instead of 5 or 6, I think, the Intersphere. Yeah. And their ER large lasers and ER pulse lasers, pulse lasers do 10 damage instead of 8 or 9, respectively. So everything's nastier, everything hits harder, everything's lighter, and faster. So they're just better.
But what about armor, Dustin? I mean, they've got to have like no armor at that point then, right?
Sometimes, yes. some of the clan mechs are running low on armor. Like you have the Hellbringer and the Summoner, which are pretty lightly armored for their weight class. And then you have mechs like the Direwolf, which have plenty of armor and all the guns. So if you see a clan mech that's moving at a Intersphere speed, as like the Direwolf does, it's a 100-tonner and it moves 3-5, it's going to have all the armor and all the guns. They do end up paying for it. So yeah, do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, how these mechs are balanced out? Because they're objectively better, ton for ton.
So you take a 75-ton clan mech like the Mad Cat / Timberwolf, and it has 230 points of armor, and you compare that to the Orion, which has 231. At 75 tons, and it is literally 2 times the available damage.
And the Orion's slower to boot.
Yes, with a 4.6 compared to the Bad Cat Timberwolf's 5.8.
It's a far superior machine.
Extremely superior. Biggest difference at that point is the battle value cost. The Orion cost a respectable 1429 battle value, and the Mad Cat is a 2737. The most expensive thing that the Intersphere could put on at this time would have been something equivalent to a Pillager, which is 2 Gauss rifles and multiple large lasers in the assault category.
Yeah. I mean, you have the classic Intersphere standard assault mech, and for some factions, the AS-7D Atlas running 1,800 and change in battle value. Far outclassed.
So they have equivalent armor for the tonnage they are at, but the damage potential is double, if not more, normally.
Yeah.
But if you thought that was bad, just wait until you get a hold of their infantry.
That come riding in on the Omnimax. You've got the elementals. So the clan warriors aren't all mech warriors. You have purpose-bred genetic freaks inside of power armor.
It's not power armor. It's not power armor. That's the key.
Sorry. Inside
power,
of
power armor is its own thing.
Elemental armor, you're right.
They are battle armor.
They are battle armor. They move one and jump three. And once they're off of the mechs they come riding in on, they will tie up your heavy, slow assets and quickly become a nightmare. Yeah. So you want to tell our listeners a little bit about elementals and what they do? And
if you've ever played or know anything about Warhammer 40,000, they are the Space Marines of Battletech. They are genetically enhanced, cybernetically enhanced at times, and they love nothing more than running around in their battle armor suits, jumping and killing either mech warriors, battle mechs, or regular infantry and vehicles. And they are quite good at it at this point.
Yeah, they're like angry little chihuahuas, but the chihuahas
have a small laser and two rounds of SRM2 ammo. So
yeah.
The damage potential isn't great, but it's the fact of once they're there, they're constantly coming for you. So the person opposite them has to react to them. And that's their biggest advantage is they're difficult to kill in one turn and they can keep on moving towards you, which kind of lets them dictate the battlefield role very well.
Yeah, you can really use elementals to put slower assets in a really hard place.
So the elementals have several offensive capabilities. They can either shoot you with their small laser, SRM you with their shoulder-mounted rockets, or worse, they can jump onto your mech and either leg attack you or swarm attack you.
I think this is really the offensive power of elementals. They can use their small lasers, and there's five troopers, so that's, you know, but you're still rolling the cluster table for that. The SRMs can reach out and touch, but you can immobilize an assault mech with five jabronis crawling around and critting out the legs. It's pretty devastating and pretty scary for battle mechs. So you can really use them to apply pressure to the opponent.
So Dustin, what I've heard and what I've said is there is not a single downside to the clan yet.
Yeah, we touched on it a tiny bit with our comparison between the Mad Cat or the Timberwolf, for those of us who don't use the dirty inner sphere designations, versus the Orion and their battle value. But clan armies pay for their superiority in the balancing mechanic of Battletech, which is battle value. If you are running a 5,000 point game, it is kind of difficult to fit a star of mechs on the field. You're going to be running one, maybe two mediums, a couple light mechs, and a star or two of elementals to squeeze into 5K. I'm pretty sure when we were playing games back in the day, if we were going to play past the Succession Wars era, we bumped the battle value up to, I want to say, 7,500 points as a minimum. Like clan striker star or like a clan battle star, you got your heavies and your mediums to back them up and maybe an assault mech in there. You're looking at like literally 15,000 battle value.
The scenario from the clan invasion rulebook actually has a 12,000 BV, quote, weakened medium star against two lances of inner sphere mechs.
Yeah, there's a huge tonnage discrepancy when you balance the games between the inner sphere and the clans by battle value. It's not auto win. You know, the inner sphere can bring a lot of weight to a BV balanced game.
I will note that that scenario that is in the rulebook has a lot of the inner sphere pilots as 2, 3, 3, 4, and only some of them are 4, 5. So they actually have a skill advantage against the clan to make up for their BV difference.
And that is one caveat for what I was talking about earlier. All of those battle values I was listing was from the assumption that you're running your list somewhat fluffy and bringing all your pilots as 3, 4. Because that 2,700 BV Timberwolf, did you put a 3-4 pilot in it, or is that at 4-5? Yeah, Timberwolf is 3,600 BV with a 3-4 pilot, which is just, that's the majority of a 5K list. And a Timberwolf with a 3-4 pilot in it is a monster on the battlefield. It's a force to be reckoned with. So you pay for it.
let's all remind each other that this was TRO 3050 that was released in 1989 of September.
There were some people that were upset with the objectively better battle mechs that came in the technical readout.
In August of 1991, Zellbringen, the concept of clan battle honor, was introduced.
The rules of engagement amongst the clan warriors.
What Zellbringen essentially is a bunch of etiquette for the battlefield. It's a way to balance against other clans and also balance against honorable opponents. Like I said, with Draconis Combine, them doing their trying to win honor for the unit and also for their faction. A lot of this boils down to issuing challenges to opponents, fighting in single one-on-one combat. No artillery or electronic warfare may be permitted, like TAG or C3. You cannot hide behind line of sight, and you must be able to fire a weapon at the opponent. You must, but also, a warrior is also expected to not retreat from inferior foes or to engage his opponent in melee combat. But this is more of an informal, frowned upon rather than hard rule.
Yeah, the Zellbringen doesn't explicitly forbid melee combat, but it's, like you said, frowned upon amongst the clan warriors.
Dustin, what's your thoughts on Zellbringen as a concept to be introduced after all of the clan technology is introduced? What are your thoughts on playing clan games with Zellbringen?
My thoughts on playing clan games with Zellbringen, I'm kind of 50-50 on Zellbringen. I find that it kind of stiffens up the game and maybe slows it down a little bit. But more importantly, I like to play Battletech from the perspective of being the commander, either in the command mech or in the command's vehicle off the field, giving orders to my units, my battle mechs, moving them around the field. Zellbringen kind of doesn't allow that to happen. It pulls you into the cockpit of each individual mech. I prefer it more for narrative games. This is a discussion to have with my opponent when I play them. But if I'm running a clan list, maybe I fluff it that it's actually a mercenary list or something like that. Or maybe we just agree to not use the Zellbringen rules 50% of the time. Yeah, I have to be honest. I'm not a huge fan of using Zellbringen on the tabletop. I like it in the fluff. I don't like to use it so much in my games. How about you?
I mean, the Battletech manual literally says in the Clan Invasion box that it is not a part of the standard rules, but only exists as a way to enrich the experience. So Zellbringen is much more of a narrative band-aid. Band-aid might be too harsh of a word. It's a narrative...
Mechanic?
Mechanic. That's the right one. That helps you get into more of the mindset of a clan player.
Yeah, do you like to use it or do you not like to use it? How many times have you played?
I've played more clan games with second line units than I have with front line units, just because, in my opinion, the Zellbringen itself kind of detracts from the finish the wounded opponent or push hard here or take out the priority VIP. It's much more of a, we are now playing four different Solaris duels on the battlefield with, I'm sorry, five, then a star on star or a lance on lance. It changes it. And like you said, it slows it down just in the, okay, well, now I'm having to think of this individual fight as its own thing rather than I'm moving the lance as an abstract flow.
I want to say I've literally played one, maybe two games of clan versus clan with Zellbringen. And another way that I feel like it detracts from the game is if you buy the book, if you're playing by the book with the rules and everybody's engaged in their duels and you lose the initiative roll, you lose five initiative rolls. Like, you get to play every single mech on the field reactively to your opponents. It is Zellbringen, the joke with the clans when they invade the Inner Sphere is that they act out of arrogance and they, you know, spoiler alert, end up having their invasion of the Inner Sphere halted because of their rigid system of honor. The clan warriors do fight somewhat tactically, but there's only so much you can do if you're putting your battlefield in a box, so to speak. So the playing Zellbringen on the tabletop reflects that cinematic, you know, experience, you know, as you're rolling the dice, which for me is not so great. It's not super feels good. It's kind of feels bad for me.
What are some highlights for when you play as Clan?
I mean, you can make references to the Somerset Strikers cartoon. You know, say all the funny things that Clanners say. That's a highlight.
So you almost enjoy playing them more for the narrative aspects rather than the tactical battlefield.
Oh, 100%. I will say, I don't mind Zelbringen in a narrative environment. Because if I'm playing a narrative game, I'm playing a different game. And for that, I don't mind my Zelbringen. In fact, I enjoy it. Zelbringen can work great if you're playing, you know, like a more of a role-playing game where you got multiple people piloting one mech, you know, against a GM of sorts. But yeah, for your pickup game. Yeah, let's talk about the pickup game. I'm not going to want to use Zelbringen for the pickup game. The narrative campaign, I'll use Zelbringen and enjoy it.
So what are your thoughts on bringing Clan versus regular 3025 Inner Sphere mechs for a pickup game like you would in a normal, like they would in the books?
Yeah, and that's one more caveat for what I was saying earlier is that I find playing with Zelbringen in the pickup game easier if I'm playing against the Inner Sphere forces, because I guess it's more cinematic in that respect. But yes, for the regular pickup game, playing Inner Sphere versus Clan is great. You have two very different forces. You have, you know, a small set of elite units, and your opponent is almost certainly going to bring more units than you will. Just in order to get to that BV balanced game, you're either bringing like a Star of Light mechs versus a Lance of Assault mechs, or you're going to be playing typically a Star versus two Lances is what I see a lot in the pickup game. And I enjoy that game. That's a fun game to play. How about you? Have you ever played Inner Sphere? I'm sure you've played Inner Sphere against a Clan opponent.
As the local Comstar player, too much so. I remember one time that I wanted to play you and I wanted to take my...
I remember this game.
Yeah, it was like a 15,000 BV Comstar versus Clan Wolf game. And the number of units on the table slowed it down that so much so that we could have finished a normal 5K game to full completion while we were still only a few turns in.
Yeah, it's rough. I've also played as the Inner Sphere versus a proper Star of Assault Ghost Bear mechs, and it's too much. I believe I brought a company, and we didn't finish our game. I'll just say that much.
So do you think the Clan suffer from their own elite cost, essentially? That while it's great to play them, the level of gameplay has to be altered so radically to fit them in?
I think it just depends on the scale of the game. You know, if you're playing a 15,000 battle value, Clan versus Clan, that game can be tidied up pretty quickly. But you have to know what you're getting yourself into if you bring 15,000 battle value Inner Sphere versus Clan. I think that's why we quickly changed from 15K down to 7.5, because that was a manageable amount of battle value. You brought the Clan list down, you dialed it back a little bit, you pumped up the numbers on the Inner Sphere side, and that seemed to be a happy medium for our pickup games that allowed us to bring, you know, disparate forces.
As much as the Clan is 3-4 pilots, I sometimes argue that the cost to benefit ratio for that is still too much, in the sense of I'm paying more than what would be reasonable on the battlefield for a regular game.
Well, the clan players did benefit from a slight BV change. The 3-4 pilot went down from, I think it was 1.38 to 1.32x, mm-hmm. Which helped out with that a little bit. And I know in that regard or in that respect, when you play your Diamond Sharks, you typically bring a second line list and you call it Solhama and you run them as 4-5, right?
Yeah, I think that's probably why I actually enjoyed playing the second line. A Piranha and a bunch of 2Cs or mechs that just are Inner Sphere variants with Clan Tech, the C variants, essentially. And that works really well for pickup games just because the points discrepancy isn't so much higher than a normal 5K intro tech game, that the technologies change, the tactics change, but the number of turns required to get to full completion is roughly the same.
Yeah, and I know you've also surprised me by bringing a super brawly second line Diamond Shark list. And I'm expecting a classic, you know, Clan game where I'm trying to close the gap while you winnow me away at range and So I run all my stuff down the field and you run all your stuff down the field. And I'm like, huh, what's going on here?
Mongoose.
I think I lost that game.
Targeting computers and medium lasers. It was the perfect mix of InnerSphere and Clan to make a intro tech brawler happy. Regular SRM6s, no streaks. It was a weird mix that definitely improved the game. Running frontline Clan, fun. It's its own thing. But I will never discourage second line Clan.
I know that I was definitely inspired to get some more of that second line stuff before we had to quit playing. And I was working on getting some of that ready to go. Or just, you know, calling my frontline mechs Solhama, and you just narrative it away. You know, we're playing on a backwater planet and a star of warriors got left abandoned as garrison with their Omnimechs. It's not unheard of. It happens.
I like to tell everyone that Clan only went up against InnerSphere in a couple of major battles. The rest were just slaughters. So if you can't win right out the gate, there's an in-lore reason that it took an entire month of Comstar beating them on a single planet to make them change their minds.
Right.
Unless you're playing an entire week-long Tukia game where the InnerSphere has reinforcements, ammo supplies, and all of that, versus a few Omnimechs and pilots that are expendable in comparison to the Comstar's unlimited numbers. It's a very different game that I don't think can be fully represented in a one-on-one pickup game.
Yeah, if you want the cinematic experience, you're going to have to play a cinematic campaign. So it's difficult to squeeze that into the pickup game.
Well, I think that pretty much wraps up our episode today. But stay tuned, because like I said, we will be talking more about how to fight the Clans, how to fight as the Clans, and we will probably have a what the faction on every individual Clan and what makes them a little bit special and different. If you liked today's episode and you want to hear more of us, you can find us on Facebook at the Mech Bay Podcast. You can also, if you have any questions, you can also reach us at themechbaypodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to talk with us on a mech-to-mech basis, you can reach us on our Discord, where you can find our invite to that on our Facebook page.